Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects we all grapple with in this conversation with a reluctant therapist. Happy Tuesday, Elizabeth.
Happy Tuesday, Hank.
What's up today?
Well, you know, like a lot of people, I survived the first round of the holiday season because we had our big Thanksgiving celebration at the house, and it was a great success. Everyone was well-behaved. Did I tell you that I initiated a new kind of tradition for the family? Did I mention that last week?
Last week, Frank was sitting in for me, no.
So I found this old trophy at an antique store that's of a bodybuilder, weightlifter, kind of flexing his muscles on the stand. And I had a plaque made that says Family Weekend Winner. And it's really glamorous. And so I got a big jar and a bunch of slips of paper, and I announced to all 18 of my family members, over the course of the week, every time you met and see someone doing something nice or being helpful or being fun or, you know, participating, nominate them for the Family Weekend Winner and fold up and put it in the jar. And at the end of the weekend, I'll look over all the nominations and we will award this trophy to whoever earned it. And then at the next family gathering, we'll do the same thing, but the previous winner will get to choose and award the next one. And it was a huge hit. I am happy to pass this tip along to anyone because it was amazing how it kind of elevated the behavior of all participants of all ages. And it was so fun to read the nominations that people put in the jar for their loved ones and their cousins or aunts or uncles. And there were nominations for everybody. So that was a great success. And I don't know, I always worry about, you know, kind of diving into the holiday season and worrying about everyone having some sort of plan of how to behave or, you know, how to interact with each other, because we get into trouble when we just kind of wander into our family dynamics and expect the worst. It's like, oh, we know it's always going to be this. And then it ends up being the worst. And so I really am trying to focus on not just for my group, but for you and for my listeners. It's like, how can we reframe how these holidays gatherings or experiences go? And maybe not just with our family, but also with our friends. So that's in my mind. And what's interesting is when I got back to school yesterday and doing a check-in with the students and how their holiday was, I was really surprised how many students said that the weekend was super stressful, that it had been overwhelming, or they came back and it had been really uncomfortable, that they were almost excited to leave. And I thought, that's distressing. I expect one or two, but a lot of students came back feeling that way. So I thought, we need to continue the conversation about how do we not just survive, because I think this idea of surviving family gatherings is what gets us into trouble. So instead, to come at this whole conversation with how can we thrive at our family gatherings? How can we thrive when we're with people that we love? So that's one. And I was thinking about how we left the show last week with this idea that it's really easy to get annoyed. You know, it's easy to be irritated by people's behavior, whether it's our family or our neighbors or people on the freeway. That's an easy reaction to have. And it's easy to look for all the ways that we think we're being slighted, right? That people are giving us a dirty look or rolling their eyes or saying something sarcastic. It's easy to always be on the lookout for those things. It's much more challenging to kind of look beyond our own experience, to let that go and step back and try to see the world through the other person's perspective. Like, instead of immediately saying, you gave me a dirty look, or why did you slight me, or why say something sarcastic, to think, gosh, I wonder if they're struggling right now, or I wonder if they had a bad day, or I wonder if they're covered with poison oak and feeling itchy. You know, I wonder if there's something going on with the other person. Instead of seeing them as the bad person who slighted you, to see them as a human who might be struggling or having a tough time, or maybe they do have an issue with you. And wouldn't it be much more powerful to say, I'm concerned that maybe you're unhappy with something that's going on, or I'm concerned that maybe we're not in a good space and can we talk about it, instead of taking it in and being offended? So that's on my mind. How can we switch that? And so these things are in my head. And then Sunday, I was invited to PCPA's production of Freaky Friday. And I love PCPA. I have a long history with PCPA, so I love any opportunity to go see a show. And I'm in love with so many of the resident artists there. So it was a great win-win all the way around. But the show Freaky Friday, even though I've seen the movie and loved it, it's about a mother and daughter who switch places. The musical had so many kind of uplifting and surprising life messages in it. I went away from the show on Sunday thinking, oh, that had a lot more depth than I expected from just a fun Disney musical. And I left feeling like I wanted every one of my family, friends and listeners to go see this, because like a lot of great pieces of art, and this is just a fun piece of art, it's not complex, it doesn't have to take you into a dark space, but like a lot of theater and art experiences, you'll leave with a lot to talk about. And so what a great starting point for family gatherings to go to something like this show at PCPA, See Freaky Friday, and then to leave and have conversations about how you liked the show or the messages in the show and seeing things from another person's perspective and how we can give each other grace. And so that all kind of brought it all together. So I thought, what better way to converse about thriving at our family holidays than to invite two of my favorite resident artists from PCPA to the studio today to talk about their experiences with the show and making art, and also their experiences in their families and family gatherings and how they make it all work. So that's where my brain is.
Okay. That's a lot.
I know. Did you fall asleep during that? Or, or were you thinking about your...
I was thinking about what annoys me. Mm-hmm. And back when my parents were alive, I would always need to go down to see them on Thanksgiving. And it was stress right off the bat because it was traffic, you know, traffic between here and...
Right. That sets
Orange
you
County.
Up to be in a grumpy
yes.
mood.
And then I just... Most people annoy me and I assume they're covered in poison ivy or poison oak. But... No, I had a very nice year this year. Quiet, stayed at home, had family over. So.
Well, and wouldn't it be a marvelous, because I was thinking about today to just driving in, because there's a lot of traffic. The Central Coast is heavy in traffic now all the time. And I had this moment of looking around at people in different cars and thinking, what if I just looked at every one of them with love? I just love them because there's someone they love and something they care about. And I kind of came into the studio feeling more uplifted than stressed than I usually do. So, yeah, that kind of theme of how do we shift our easy path to annoyance to this, why don't we go in an uplifted direction? And how much better off not only will our relationships be, but would our mental health and physical health be? So that's where we're going today. We're going to have a conversation with Kitty Bailey and Karen Hendricks from PCPA. We're going to open up the phone lines at some point to hear about your experience over the holidays or working to see things through someone else's perspective. So you'll be able to be a part of the conversation. You can find me on our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist, or send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. You can check out our website, thereluctanttherapist.com, or listen to previous shows at kcbx.org under the News Talk tab. There's years of shows you could check out. And if you'd like to have the convenience of podcasting the show, you can go to Apple Podcasts or NPR One, search A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, and hit subscribe, and the show will be there to listen to at your convenience. But I'm really looking forward to this conversation. So we'll be back in a moment to get into the work.
Although you see the world different than me, sometimes I can touch upon the wonders that you see, and all the new colors and pictures you've designed. Oh yes, sweet darling, so glad you are a child of mine. Oh, yes,
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX, and I am excited to have two friends, two talented women here in the studio with me today, resident artists, both of them, Kitty Bailey and Karen Hendricks. And Karen also is a member of the faculty on the Conservatory at PCP, but also you're on the faculty at Cal Poly.
I am, yes.
So how long have you been a part of PCPA now?
PCPA, 8 years. So I've been doing all the shows, teaching all of the classes. It's been a nice long run so far.
And how did you get involved with Cal Poly?
Actually, we have a fantastic gentleman who taught theater history at PCPA named Josh McAmer, who is the chair of the theater department at Cal Poly. So he snagged me a couple years after I started at PCPA. And so now I just teach one class a quarter, but I love it. It's really fun.
So theater immerses your life.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, absolutely.
And my other guest is Kitty Bailey, also resident artist and faculty member and now a director for the company, PCPA. And you're also a mom of three children, 19, 16, and 13.
All teenagers and all their teenage friends are at my house
Are you
all
the
times.
House where everyone gathers?
Yes, yeah.
And do you love that?
And that we designed that. We wanted that to be the case, so we made choices so that could happen. So then you know where they are, and
exactly,
and you get to hear lots of conversations, and that's a good thing.
And it's fun with teenagers because, and even when they're younger, they forget you're in the room pretty quickly,
yeah,
and just kind of go wherever they like with the conversation, kind of be the fly on the wall. And so is this your first show you'll be directing coming up this year?
No, I directed last season a play called Trying that Karen was in. Mm-hmm. That was fantastic. And I also directed a show at the Melodrama.
Oh.
So this will be my third professional show.
Congratulations.
I'm very happy about it. It's as I've gotten older, as I've been doing this for so long, I have definitely found that that I want to be a part of more of the storytelling than playing a single character. Our job as actors is to just stay, as Karen says, in our lane, and that's our focus. And as I'm getting older, and frankly, there are just not very many parts for older women, that it's far more interesting for me to be talking to all of the designers and be a part of the whole story.
And so you've been with PCPA since 1990,
mm-hmm.
with a little time off.
Yeah, so I kept working full time after my first son was born, and then after my second son was born, I couldn't do it anymore because it's crazy hours. It's 6 days a week, and nights and weekends, and so I was able to stay home for a few years, and then my daughter was born, and then I was a guest artist periodically, and that was nice. And then several years ago, I came back full time.
So I usually assume that everyone knows about PCPA, but it's really not a great assumption anymore because we've grown as a county and a community, and we cover from Santa Barbara all the way up to Monterey. So for people who aren't aware of the fact that we have a professional conservatory program on the Central Coast, can you talk a bit about PCPA and what it offers and why people should be excited to have this here?
Absolutely. So PCPA is a two-year conservatory program that's associated with Allen Hancock College. We have the professional actor training program and the technical theater program. And it's a conservatory. Like I said, it's 6 days a week where it's an master apprentice style teaching model, so that the students are coming in and working with professionals in the field that they want to be working with. So the actors are taking classes from professional actors, and it works both ways in that we teach things that then will be in rehearsal or performances that night or that weekend, and we have to be following through on the things that we're teaching.
Right.
So there's that. So
high level of role modeling.
It's high level of
it's
role
a lot
modeling.
Of pressure, but yeah. it keeps us on point.
Yeah. And then the technical students work with professional designers, and so they get all of this practical professional experience.
And so along with the training that happens at PCPA. There's also the performances, right? The shows, the seasons that are held not only at the Marion Theater, but also down in Solvang. Because it's funny, I have a few friends that are familiar with Solvang and have been down there, but didn't know that it was associated with Hancock or with the Marion Theater. So can you talk a bit about the season and what shows people can see?
Oh, absolutely. So that's putting me on the spot a little bit.
I know.
So obviously, that's okay. Obviously, right now we're doing Freaky Friday the musical. So that's playing until December 23rd. And the next up on the docket is The Crucible. So an amazing Arthur Miller classic.
Very timely.
Yes.
For what we're experiencing right now.
I think so.
Absolutely.
I've never worked on it before, so I'm really, really excited to really have an intimate experience with this great work. And then, Katie, you should talk about the one that you're directing.
I will. And one second, just about The Crucible. I'm part of the League of Women Voters in Santa Maria, and we're working on creating a forum in association with Allan Hancock College about media literacy and being able to spot fake news, to avoid it. And so figuring out a way to tie that in with The Crucible, where there is a lot of fake news in it and mob mentality, and then people die because of it. And so that's an interesting, it's very topical right now. Then I'll be directing The Curious Case of the Watson Intelligence, which is a contemporary play, and it deals with artificial intelligence, it deals with people who are trying to reinvent themselves or to invent an ideal relationship, an ideal device that you can have an ideal relationship with, and how faulty that is. So it's very contemporary. It's time hopping. It's very entertaining, but also brings up a lot of very important questions.
Yeah, so a lot of social
questions
have come up just in the last week about AI and
yes.
what the role it's going to be
yes.
in society. So we'll have to talk about that
when
that comes up.
Good.
And then I'm sure there's more musicals on tap.
Yeah. So The Hunchback of Notre Dame. Mm-hmm. So we've got another Disney on the roster coming up. And then we move into the summer season. So we're presenting Mamma Mia, the musical, which I know that a lot of people are familiar with the music of ABBA.
That's going to be a blast.
And then, will that also play in Solvang?
It will, yes. Mm-hmm. So The Hunchback will move to Solvang, as well as Mamma Mia. And then we have a great play called Arcadia that's moving down to Solvang. So both at the Marion and in Solvang. So I'm not missing anything, am I?
Yes.
What am I missing?
Sonia Masha.
Christopher Durang. So yeah, yes. A really, really funny play by Christopher Durang, who's one of the most famous playwrights for absurdism. Yeah. He's actually maybe my favorite playwright. And that's hard to say. But I really, really love reading Christopher Durang. So Masha, Sonia, Spike.
Vanya, Sonia, Masha, Spike.
There's
four
names. So if
you
can remember, you can remember the title, you can
see it. It's kind of a spinoff of Anton Chekhov's work. Mm-hmm. So if you like old Russian plays, even if you don't, you're really going to enjoy kind of the spin that Christopher Durang puts on it. So it's a list of Chekhovian names that we'd never get right.
Yeah, we'd never do. That's why I was panicking there for a second. Yeah. But it's going to be hilarious.
But there's such a variety throughout the year, and it's right in Santa Maria, which again, for people who are new to the area or didn't know that we had this theater company, it's there, and you just can Google PCPA and check out all their information. And let's jump into Freaky Friday and kind of what inspired me to call you up and say come do the show with me, because Freaky Friday is a cute kids movie. You know, that talks about the disgruntled, angry teenager and the mom who's really busy trying to keep her career and her life together. And she's got a marriage pending. Like, I remember all that part. Isn't that funny? And then they change places. And it kind of, all the hilarity ensues of the dealing with being mom and you're actually in your daughter's body. That was fun. But what surprised me about Freaky Friday, again, was kind of the life messages about self-image and being a part of a community or seeing the world through the lens of the people that you feel are trying to, keep you down, like your mother or your teenager. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about Freaky Friday as from your perspective, because Karen, you play the mom, and then you play a teenager for half the show. So what's this experience been like?
So I get to play at the top of the show. I get to play Catherine, who is the 40-year-old mother who's who's prepping for her second wedding after her previous husband passed. And about 20 pages into the script, something magical happens, and I flip into the daughter, Ellie, who's a 16-year-old. I get to play her for, I would say, the majority of the show until, I guess, in the end, you'll have to come and see what happens. But it was you know, it's been a blast. It's been so much fun. And it's interesting because our director, Eric Stein, who's just a brilliant, brilliant actor and a really, really fantastic director, showed up to the process, not ever having experienced being a mother or a daughter. So we had a lot of really great discussions in preparation to stage this play. And he did so much research, and it was really, really fun to hear into it. But at the same time, I had to say, Eric, I've been researching my entire life.
Having been a daughter.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a mother. I'm not. But I certainly have relationships in which I draw upon a lot of my mothering impulses and instincts, but certainly in terms of having experience with a crunchy mother-daughter relationship that is just full of love but also crunch, that's something that is so embedded inside me. It was not hard to dive into this play. In not just in the fun parts, but also in the really, really deep emotional,
right, because the storyline is fairly heavy. I mean, their father died.
Yes.
And so the children, there's two children, the 16-year-old and a 10-year-old son. Mm-hmm. They're you can see very clearly they're both still dealing with the trauma of losing a father. Not very light and Disney-esque, because you can see kind of the anger that bubbles up in them quickly, or the feeling left out.
And the fear of replacing him. I think that's really what it is, right? He's of the wedding, the impending wedding. They're afraid that he'll replace, the teenager is afraid that he'll replace their father.
And then the son, who's 10, is kind of excited because he doesn't remember dad. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of depth to just the whole premise of the story. And if you're just tuning in, this is A Conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. My guests are Kitty Bailey and Karen Hendricks, resident artist from PCPA. And we're talking about the current show that's running at PCPA, Freaky Friday, through the 23rd of December. And just, again, a fun show to take the family to, or to go to any age group. Great music, great dancing, fun show. But beneath just the fun part of going to the show, there are these themes of how do we deal with loss in life, and then how do we carry on, you know, to accept that things change and accept the new husband into the family. And it seemed from the mother's perspective, her response to losing her first husband was to get super intense. Like, she's so tightly wound, and everything has to be perfect and in order. And her attempt to keep everything tightly organized has alienated kind of her daughter. Their relationship is estranged. And so how does that play out, not just for the people watching, but for the actors on stage? Like, how do you keep it fun but still share kind of the depth of what's happening?
I think it's really in the text. Karen and I were talking about that. I am very moved by Catherine, the mother, because I don't remember hardly ever seeing a middle-aged woman who has children and who works as the protagonist in a play. And it's light and it's fun, but you really get to see how she's torn in so many different directions, and is how we try to, and I of course identify with her, but how we try to make the best choices for our children, because we have all this world experience and we can see things they can't, but that we can't see things that they can see.
Right.
We can't see what they're going through, and that discovery of empathy, where we get to see Catherine say, if she says, I'm a failure as a mother, or something to that effect, and they both feel like failures in ways, and then they get to discover the other person and what they're going through, and they have so much more empathy. They have great discoveries about how difficult it is to be the other person.
Mm-hmm. And there's part of that, you know, the whole development of teenagers. Two things are happening. One, they're trying to move away from you and develop their own personalities. And the other piece is that they're trying to fight for independence in the home. Right?
Yes.
So it's like, don't parent me, but see me as an individual. So that struggle for the teenager, but at the same time also dealing with feeling awkward at her high school.
Yes.
Having a crush on a boy that every time she sees him, she becomes jello. And for the mom, for Catherine, she only sees her daughter as trying to annoy her, or you know, that, like you sitting in the audience, I guess, which is so wonderful as a therapist to be able to sit in the audience. It's like watching one of my clients act out what happens at home,
and
how they
telling
got
their stories.
Telling their stories, and it's so interesting to sit out in the audience and be able to see. Oh, wait a second, mom, she's not just trying to be annoying or stop moving her hair. Like you can see both of their perspectives played out, and I imagine that's a great conversation starter, because at home with families we can only see things through our own experience, and mm-hmm. So for Catherine, she's trying to keep everything together and wants everyone to just be perfect and okay, and for her daughter she's saying, no, just see me as I am. You know, I would imagine that would open like great conversations about, so what's it like for you when you go to high school? Was this play anything like what you experience when you're at school? Because mm-hmm. you have three teenagers, do you ever wonder what their day-to-day is like, especially doing this play?
Oh, absolutely. One of the things I think is so powerful about this mother-daughter relationship that I feel, because I live with my daughter and my mother, and being in the middle of this.
So your mom lives with you in the cave.
Yeah. And is this that my daughter and I and my mother and I, our identities are so entwined. And I feel my daughter, you know, needing to push away, but then coming back, mm-hmm. and needing to push away and coming back. That's why I love this book, Tangled, Untangled, so much, describing that need, especially that my relationship with my daughter and what she's going through is different than with my sons. And there are similarities, but there are things that are really specific to girls, that because our identities are so enmeshed, you know, we look alike, we sound alike, and she needs to be her own person. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that hurts, being the person that is, they're pushing it away. I love how the author described in Untangled the idea that daughters often have to, it's like they're pushing, holding on to the side of the pool, and sons do this too, but they have to push away from the side of the pool to find their independence. Mm-hmm. But with daughters and mothers, that is often in a very personal, hurtful way,
right?
Because their currency is relationships,
and there has to be that rejecting piece, and that's what I think becomes so painful, is that it's not I just need time away, but it's like everything you stand for I have to reject.
I have to reject. And you feel like you've broken up.
Yes.
It's like you've broken up with this wonderful, wonderful relationship. And then they come back to you. Mm-hmm. And then they push away again. And so, I mean, really see that in this play in a way that I don't remember ever seeing in another play, that gives it depth, but at the same time, that's this great pop soundtrack and funny things that are happening, that we get to laugh through it, and then suddenly there will be moments that you get all choked up because it's so true.
Well, and Karen, watching you play the 16-year-old teenager was phenomenal, and your voice is phenomenal.
Incredible.
But it must, you know, the other thing that was interesting from that perspective, to watch you as the mom in your daughter's body kind of reconnecting to who you were as a 16-year-old. Like, you could see that too, that the 40-year-old mom all of a sudden was realizing, oh, I used to be fun, or I remember feeling this way, and oh my gosh, that's a cute boy. And so to have those two things going on at once, like I just keep thinking about how the whole idea of perspective, if we can actually get into someone else's shoes and see the world through their eyes, not only do we have greater appreciation for how hard they're trying to get by, but also to awaken in us feelings we used to have.
Right.
Like, you're not that old, but can you remember what it was like to be 16? Do you feel those feelings when you're playing the 16-year-old?
Oh, that's still me.
Oh, it is.
So I'm 37, and this character that the play, you know, with the mother is 40. So it's not that far off.
Right.
It's not much
not
of
a stretch. Yeah.
I think maybe if you're coming in expecting Jamie Lee Curtis, you'll maybe be surprised. But the way that this particular play is written, she's supposed to be 40. But, you know, I'll say, that all of that 16-year-old, that's still in
me. So those feelings are in there, ready to surface.
You just have to say, okay, you can draw on that. You can still be that. But that's the fun thing about being an actor, is that we get to play all of the time. And, we invite ourselves to connect with the inner child. So it's not too hard to do. It's kind of like, oh, fantastic, I finally have permission.
Yeah.
I can be silly and weird. And
I don't have to have my act pulled together.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Funky, bad posture, stupid dancing, all of my favorite things, you know. So
crushes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But, you know, what I was going to say is really interesting, because Kitty was talking about her experience with her mom and her daughter, is that I was really excited for my mom to come see this, because obviously, you know, as actors and artists, we have to draw so much on our lives, mm-hmm. to fill the lives of these fictitious characters. So there was so much, obviously, of me in this, but so much too of my mother. So I was really, really interested in what her response was going to be. And she's come now, she's seen it twice, even though she lives in Arizona, but I've gotten her to see it twice so far. And it was just the coolest thing, I have to say.
Did she recognize herself in your...
She did not. I told her afterwards, you know how Catherine snapped, you know, to get the daughter off the table. I was like, that was from you. And there's a point where I suggested to the director, I'm like, I really want to chew gum here, because my mom always used to make me spit out my gum in her hand. And he said, yeah, you can chew gum. So, I mean, there's just so much nuance that was added to this that was just... I don't know, I guess in honor of my mother-daughter relationship, but also just because that's the only thing I know. So in order to make it authentic, you know, I drew on all of that. But, you know, we talked about it for a while afterwards, and she turned to me and she said, "Do you think I'm controlling?" And I said, "Yes, Mom, I do." And I said, but that's okay. I know now that's because... you love me, you know. And she looked at me and she said, "You know, I just always felt so responsible for you kids. And when I told you couldn't wear that, it was because I couldn't let you. And when I told you couldn't go out, it was because, you know, I was supposed to be in charge of you." And it was really, really sweet to see her knocked off balance like that, but in a way that did create the empathy and
that
the
humanized
understanding.
Her experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I think there is so much of that teenager parent conflict where, and I feel that still as a parent, that I do feel responsible. And as Kitty was saying, I see my daughter, I see myself and my daughter so much that I also don't want them to go through the same things
that I did.
I want to protect them from the inevitable. And it's like watching a train wreck happening very slowly. It's like, wait, don't make those same choices. And yet you can't prevent it, but I also can't prevent my mother instinct from wanting my children to maybe not have to go through the same. They'll have their own stuff, but not the same stuff I did.
Right. Yeah, it's funny about the clothing, because my daughter and I, almost every single day before she goes to school, we have an argument about it. Even though I try to find other, I was like, let's talk about it beforehand. Let's just, you know, let's agree on what's appropriate for school.
Let's lay out some selections.
Exactly. And she's like, "Why do you have to pick on me?" And I say, "I'm not picking on you. I'm watching your back. I'm here to, you know, to help you," but she doesn't see it like that. And it's interesting, you having that conversation with your mother, because I had a conversation with my daughter after she saw the show, and she said, "What would it be like if we changed bodies? I wonder what that would be like." And then she said, "Nah, you work too much. That wouldn't be any fun."
she already acknowledges how hard you work.
Yeah.
Well, and it's interesting, because one of the most powerful therapeutic tools we have is role playing. Mm-hmm. Virginia Satir introduced it back in the 70s, and Gestalt therapists mm-hmm. use it all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, the empty chair where you switch places, and we have the mother take the child's role, and we'll put the child up on a chair so that they're as tall as mom is, and then they talk to each other to get a sense of what it feels like to be in that place. That's why part of the story and going to see the show was so powerful for me, because it was like watching great family systems, Virginia Satir work in action, but with music, because this ability to switch roles, to be able to let a 10-year-old be the mom in that moment and, you know, talk to their mom as they are talked to, it's powerful, powerful stuff. If you're just tuning in, this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. My guests today are Karen Hendricks and Kitty Bailey, both resident artists from PCPA, and we'll be back to continue the conversation and to take your calls.
You know which way to go. Don't have to look behind. Oh, yes, sweet darling. So glad you are a child of mine. Child of mine.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, and you're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. And our number is 805-781-3875 if you'd like to jump into the conversation and go anywhere you'd like. We can talk about PCPA, if Freaky Friday, if you've seen the show. We can talk about mothers and daughters' relationships or family relationships and how complex it is in our family gatherings to have the grace for everyone else's experience, because we're so vested in our family relationships, right? We want our parents' love. We want our children's love. We want our siblings' love. We want to be loved. We all have that desire to be loved. And yet in our efforts to be loved, we can be hurt so easily. It's so mm-hmm. easy to see responses that family members have as maybe a slight or something that is hurtful. Like, I don't know why our tendency is to look for the ways we're being hurt instead of to look for the ways we're being loved. And I don't know if that's just part of the developmental task, or maybe it's part of the way we've been socialized or our social context. But I just think it's so interesting that in families, it's easier to see the ways we're being hurt by other family members than it is to see the ways we're being loved mm-hmm. by everyone in our family. To be able to see that when mom takes the hair out of your eyes or straightens your dress or doesn't want you to go out with a certain boy, that it's love coming all over you, but it's read as annoying or controlling. And it's so fascinating to me that's how families get into trouble, is because we're misreading these very basic human emotions. We're misreading care and love as being controlling and painful. And wouldn't it be wonderful to be able to go to a show like this or to have these conversations and to just be able to flat out say, you know, mom, when you poke at my clothes, you make me feel like I'm not pretty. Or, you know, to be able to say to your child, when you get short with me because I work too much. And I know you probably hear this from your kids. And I know that my girls will text me and say, why every time I want to talk to you, you're at work? You know, and instead of saying, gosh, mom, I appreciate how much you work because you're loving me with this, everything seems to be misread. And how can we flip that? How can we flip that so even over the next month or so with all of these gatherings, you could do that surprise thing? And instead of getting annoyed when your mom says, are you going to eat that? Or, you know, are you going to wear that?
Are you really wearing that?
Exactly. That it can be, say, I love that you love me so much. And I'm sorry that my outfit makes you uncomfortable. But, you know, like, wouldn't that be amazing to stop down and have that happen? Is it possible? Yeah.
I don't know. It makes me think.
I have no answer.
I know. One of the things I think about the moment in the show, that it's actually when Karen is playing Ellie. And throughout we see, you know, Ellie's unhappy about this wedding that her mother's about to get married. And she's acting out in different ways. And
she's struggling in school.
She's having a hard time. And then we get that wonderful moment that first of all, I think it's great that we have that conflict on stage. We get to see that conflict and why she's, and see her acting out, seeing the mother having trouble with it when she's trying to make everything great in her own way. But then the great moment when Mike, the fiance, says to, he thinks he's talking to his fiance, yes, about the teenage girl, and he says, it's okay, she can be mad because her father died, and that's okay, that she can have those feelings. And it's really wonderful because the show isn't preachy in any way, but you get these little moments of clarity of, if you just look at it from somebody else's point of view. And with Ellie, she's trying to hold on to her dad. She's trying not to lose her dad who has died. And acting-wise, we call those intentions. So she's pushing Mike away and pushing away this marriage because she's holding on to her dad. And we all have intentions. We all are trying to do the thing we're trying to do. And if everybody could just see it the way we see it, then we'd all get along, you know?
And if we could wear our intentions on our heart.
Yeah.
Right?
So it's not really about Mike. It's because that's what we discover in the end. She loves Mike.
Right.
But she's so afraid of losing the memory of her father and losing that love that she feels for him. And if
so
we could wear
be,
it.
Yeah. Maybe that's the exercise that all of us need to do, is to understand our own intentions also. What is it that we're afraid of? Mm-hmm. What is it we're protecting in ourselves? Because it's easy to be annoyed when someone does something that feels like a slight or intentionally hurting our feelings or picking at us. But if we could ignore that and pay attention to more, why am I reacting? Like, why does this hurt me? What is it inside of me that I'm protecting? You know, am I feeling badly about my body, or am I feeling afraid that they're going to judge me, or, you know, what is the thing that we fear losing or being exposed to that causes us to react so defensively? I mean, those are some big steps to take, that before we head into a family gathering, to take an assessment moment and say, what are the things I'm struggling with right now? Where am I going to be sensitive? Like, what might be some of those areas that I might respond to because I'm not feeling my best? And then to write those things down, maybe on a piece of paper, so that when, you know, your aunt or your mother or your father or your brother says that triggery thing, instead of immediately getting defensive or angry or lashing out, to be able to go, oh yeah, I am sensitive about that because I'm worried about losing my job, or I am feeling, you know, self-conscious because my body's changing. That would be a great exercise. Mm-hmm. It's like an acting exercise that you probably give to your students when they're taking on a role, to
absolutely
kind of understand those deeper intentions that
what
a character
they want.
Has.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And then those things are the fuel, the things that are fueling it, that aren't always rational, because that's always the most interesting, when people act in irrational ways on stage, because that's the most truthful, because people usually don't act in a rational way. It's like, why are they so, you know, upset about that? That's so interesting.
And isn't it interesting also when there are disagreements in the family and someone will say, you're being irrational?
Oh my gosh.
Which makes you feel more crazy.
Yeah, totally.
Because in our heads, our behavior makes total sense.
Yes.
So the art is, how do we get underneath the irrationality and make it make sense?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, maybe I look irrational, but here's what's driving my behavior.
Well, and it's, you know, if you're playing a villain, if you're playing Richard III, there's a reason he rationalizes why he needs to kill everyone.
Why was
everyone
it?
In his family? It's so that he can become king, and the world will be a better place when he's the king. And so he rationalizes why these things need to happen. And no matter that, that's what we all do.
So you think of the mom in Freaky Friday, she's thinking, I lost my husband, the kid's dad, so it's my job now to keep everything perfect and tidy, and we don't want any more sadness or disappointment. Like,
right.
I could see her motivations very clearly, because she was now tasked with doing things she felt she wasn't prepared to do, to raise this family on her own and kind of find her way. And so you can see from my perspective and see it, but you can also see from her daughter's perspective how her mom just looks crazy.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And playing her mother, I come in.
Kitty plays Catherine's mother.
I play Catherine's mother. Uh-huh. And so I'm...
So what's your intentionality?
My intention, I want her to marry him because I think that will be so good for her and for these children if they have a husband and a father, and that things will be better. They'll have moved through this time of sadness and move into a better place. So my character comes in and is pushing her, and I come in and I'm fixing her hair and
doing the same.
Yeah, I do. And I'm like, Karen, am I making you crazy yet? And she said, yeah, it's good.
I love it.
But pushing her toward this wedding, and even when she says, I'm not ready, that I want her to go forward. And it's because my character doesn't see, well, I don't realize that you're actually Ellie. Right? But I have my own point of view that would be the best for everybody. And so I'm definitely pushing it.
But I'd also imagine as her mother, you want her to be happy and safe and okay, because you're carrying the grief and sadness of seeing your daughter struggle.
Yes.
You know, it goes up to that.
Yes.
So for you, you need her to get married and be okay again so you can be okay again.
Yes. Yeah. Mm. We have a beautiful moment that I just love so much right before she's about to walk down the aisle and asking her if she's nervous and acknowledging how important her former husband was and first husband, and then how much Mike loves her so much and that I want the best for her. And it's I love that moment. I'm glad we get that.
And so when you're doing this work of preparing to do a show and you're looking at your intentionalities, what's the most fun? Is it kind of getting the dialogue together and finding yourself in that place? Is it learning the dances? Is it getting up and belting these songs? Like, what does this work in theater do for you?
I love every single piece of
it,
I have to say. But I, particularly with these contemporary shows, it's so, so, so much fun. Well, all shows, I guess, but to do the research. Mm-hmm. So I was saying earlier that Eric did a lot of research on mother-daughter relationships, and I did not need to do that particular research. But I did a lot of research into teen depression and what it would be like to lose a parent, because that's not something that's part of my experience, and that seemed to be an apt diagnosis for what the 16-year-old was going through. I did a lot of research on millennials.
I bet.
Because I'm like right in the middle of the X generation and the millennial generation, but you know what it would be like to be 16 right now, mm-hmm. and like the behaviors, and I got to learn some really cool new dances that my students kind of helped me learn, you know, just different things to kind of put myself into the place of a 16-year-old now. But I just love to get into the body but all of the choices that you make ever in theater have to be based in the correct given circumstances. So mm-hmm. so the given circumstances being just the facts of the play. So not just what the playwright's given you, but just also the landscape of the reality of the world of the story.
Right, you're creating that time and space.
Yeah.
And that's a part we haven't touched on, which was the whole selfies and the phone part that comes into the play. There's that whole piece of the hunt, mm-hmm. and the kids are, you know, active on their phones and taking selfies and sneaking out and doing kind of risky things around town. And I think about that a lot, that the culture of the 16-year-olds and this whole idea of having the perfect selfie and having themselves, like they put themselves in places of judgment all the time, taking a photo of themselves in a bikini or doing something and then being open to all the likes or judgment. Like that seems crazy to me. And yet it's the norm. Do you see that in your kids? Like, how does this phone culture, because that's all I know what to call it, the phone culture, impact them?
Well,
Kitty's eyes just watched because it's too many ways.
Well, yeah, it's so big. It's so big and deep, and it's ingrained in them that they can't imagine life without it.
Right.
I once said to my daughter a few years ago, she learns everything off of YouTube. Like at this point she was doing lots of crafts and things like that. And I said, you know what? When I was your age, I would have loved that. She said, you didn't have YouTube? I said, we didn't have computers. Right. We didn't have the internet. What are you talking about? And her brain exploded. She couldn't imagine life.
Would do anything.
It was like I talked about living in a covered wagon or something. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? She can't imagine. And I feel like that with all my kids, that they're so connected to other people all the time. Mm-hmm. And I am too. But they are always taking pictures of themselves.
it's interesting how they wrote it right into the play, this whole scavenger hunt they're doing, mm-hmm. with their phones and connecting and wanting to make sure that they're acknowledged and a part of the group and a part of the clique. Like, high school is intense as it is when we all went to high school, but it's interesting to see it played out on stage because... And maybe I'm trying, and like I'm kind of thinking in real time, but sometimes I think that the 16-year-olds I know today are more emotionally deep than we were when we were 16. Like, I don't remember thinking about things at the level that a lot of the 16-year-olds I know today do. And maybe it's because of climate, like the reality of the world is maybe in their face all the time because they're on their phones, because they're getting news and media and information all the time, that I feel like the 16-year-olds are holding much more adult pressure than I remember.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Yeah.
And that, you know, the messages of what the grief that Ellie's feeling about losing her dad and wanting to, you know, be in a relationship with this boy and maintaining her friendships and having a relationship with her mom. They're just like, it seemed like an underlying heaviness that would be more than you would expect that a teenager would experience. And I wonder if that was intentional in the play or if it's just the way I was reading it. Hmm. Because there wasn't, even though the teenagers were having fun and doing these activities around town, it just had a certain heaviness. And I love that it's set in Chicago because my daughter goes to school in Chicago. Oh, right. And so everything that they were talking about, riding on top of the L and going down to the – I had just been there last week. I thought, oh, my gosh, this is so timely and wonderful. So my other thought was how fun it would be to be a kid raised in a city like Chicago. They have much maybe more sophisticated than a kid raised in a rural area like Santa Maria or the Central Coast, because they're riding the L to school or going into the city to get lunch. They have much more access to adult activities than our kids do who are raised here. Mm-hmm. If you're just tuning in, this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. My guests are Kitty Bailey and Karen Hendricks. They're both resident artists at PCPA. They're both on the faculty at the conservatory at PCPA. Kitty is also a director. And Karen is also on faculty at Cal Poly teaching the theater department. And we're talking about the show Freaky Friday, which is playing until December 23rd at the Marion Theater. And if you've never been to a show at PCPA, this is a great time to jump in, and great for all ages. Great conversation starter for your family gatherings. After I left, I kept thinking this is the perfect place to go with your family before the holidays or before the big gatherings, because it'll be a great conversation starter, great icebreaker to be able to say, is this what you experience, or what is high school like for you, or wouldn't it be interesting if we swapped places? As I mentioned earlier, you know, the whole idea of role playing is a big part of family systems therapy, and Virginia Satir used it a lot in her practice, who is my mentor. And this idea that we allow family members to kind of role play how they experience being you. So if you have a child who feels like you're too hard on them and yell all the time, and you as the parent feel like they don't listen to you and don't respect the rules, to switch spots. We'll put the child up on a chair kind of looking down at mom and allow the child to kind of, what is it like when mom tells you what to do? And that child will get right in there. And it's amazing how children will totally take on the parent's voice and their movements. You know, they're little actors. They absolutely get into playing the role, and they know that they're safe. Their parents aren't going to get mad at them because the therapist is there. And they really can vent out a lot of that frustration. And parents will say, when you're down on the ground looking up at your child, imitating what it looks like to them to be you, it wakes you up. It's like, I don't know if my parenting is as effective as I think it is, because my child's only seeing me wagging my finger as an ogre, and I'm not getting my care and love across the child. So to go to the show, to take this back home, to maybe play with this idea of role playing. Couples do it a lot also. Some things to think about. So if people are interested in seeing the show, how do they get tickets?
You can go to pcpa.org and order tickets right online, or you can call the box office.
And we will look that number up for you, but you can call the box office.
We're going to find that number for you really fast here.
That's why we're not on the marketing team. Yes. We're just the actors and teachers.
On stage.
But we're going to get that information for you.
But the tickets, are tickets still available up until the 23rd. Plenty of time to go see it. And then the entire season runs from now until next August. I mean, there's really, when we say season, it's not like it kind of goes dark and nothing happens for a long period of time, is there? I mean, there seems to be something coming down the road.
Absolutely. All the time.
Yeah.
And we're always producing.
And if you love theater, just as another side note, it's a great place for children to learn about emotions and themselves and to try on different characters and behaviors. And so if you have a child that's interested in all theater, bring them to PCPA because they'll be inspired to take it on for themselves. It's a great extracurricular.
Well, I think all children should be taken to the theater. Everyone needs to go to the theater. I think it's one of the very best thing you can do to be a citizen in the community, a citizen of the world, is to go and see other people's stories and to find empathy for other people's stories, the way other lives are lived than just the bubble that maybe we live in, and to allow yourself to be engaged in someone else's story.
Thank you, Kitty.
What's interesting is because a lot of people go and see films, and I was thinking about it the other day. I remember every single live theater experience I have ever seen, but even clocking back to kindergarten, first grade, you know, when groups would come to the school as outreach or whatever it was, I remember everything. But there's so many movies that I don't remember. Did I see that?
Yeah,
I can't recall. But it's there's something that imprints inside of you when you have that live experience.
Yeah.
Thank you, Karen Hendricks. Thank you, Kitty Bailey. The number to PCPA is 805-922-8313. This has been a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. Find out more information at kcbx.org or my Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist. I look forward to continuing the conversation next Tuesday at 2:00.